Now we are going through chapter 13 of the Gita, and this chapter is very important for us to know for two reasons. One is that this chapter is the beginning of the Jnana Yoga portion of the Gita. As you all know, from chapters 13 to 18 is the Jnana Yoga portion. Secondly, this chapter 13 especially is the very essence or the cream of the Upanishads. If we understand the essence of this chapter, you will understand the essence of the Upanishads. So these six verses that we covered last week, it will be important if we can just briefly go through so that you can refresh your memory, and then be easy to connect to the rest of the chapter, rest of the verses. Now, as you all know that this chapter started with a question from Arjuna, and that question does not appear in this book, but we have provided extra copies, so those of you who don't have can collect from Puri, okay? Now, the question was from Arjuna, was clarification on the, what was it? Six Vedantic terms, right? And what are the Vedantic terms? Kshetra, Kshetrajna, Jnanam, Neyam, Prakatim, and Purusha. And as we discussed, although Arjuna asked for clarifications on six terms, in reality, actually, we can condense all the six terms down into three categories. And the rest of the chapter 13, the 34 verses here, are an answer by Krishna to Arjuna's question. Okay? So now, if we just look at the whole creation, this is what chapter 13 is trying to tell us. That the whole creation only consists of two components, that is, one is consciousness and matter. So the combination of consciousness plus matter equals to the whole creation. Now the question is, this consciousness and matter have been given different names or terms, but in the end there's only two. So if you look at Arjuna's question, Kshetrajna falls under it. Where does Kshetrajna fall under it? And this is Kshetrajna. And where does Kshetra fall under? Then if you look at Purusha, where does Purusha fall under? And Prakriti is matter. And then are there any other terms which we can call which say the same thing? Jnanam is not. Jnanam in fact is a separate topic. He asked for Jnanam. But Jnanam does not fall under consciousness of matter. We come to Jnanam. Any other terms that you are aware of? No of the field is here. Kshetrajna. Kshetrajna is no of the field. Kshetra is the field. Atma, where does Atma fall under? Then what is the matter? What is the word for matter? Atma is consciousness, what is the word for matter? What? Anatma, yes, correct. Then there is Anatma. And one more word that Arjuna asked for. Neyam. Name means also consciousness. It's another name for consciousness. And when we are ignorant of consciousness, if we are ignorant of consciousness and we only focus on matter, then that Krishna also is called state of ignorance. So name is another terminology for nothing but consciousness. And this consciousness we can call Atma, we can also call as Brahman, it is one and the same. Now another terminology which was used, if you remember in chapter 7, Krishna used Apara Prakriti and Para Prakriti. So where does Apara Prakriti fall under? Consciousness. So you have Para Prakriti. And Para
Prakriti.
See, I want to know whether you all are alert. So Para Prakriti and Apara. So you have various terms and terms used, but at the end, what does it say? Consciousness and matter. That's all. And the other question that Arjuna wanted to know was jnanam. What is jnanam? What was the definition of jnanam? Knowledge of what? Jnanam are the values or the virtues that we have to cultivate in order to prepare the mind to receive the knowledge. Knowledge of what? Knowledge of Kshetram and Kshetrajna. Okay? So we need knowledge of Kshetra and Kshetrajna. In order to gain this knowledge, we must have certain values, certain virtues in us. If we have these virtues in us, then the mind is ready to receive and absorb the knowledge of Kshetra and Kshetrajna. Now, having understood this, this is the question by Arjuna. In the very first verse then, we see that since the whole creation is nothing but mixture of matter and consciousness, we must understand that matter is the visible part of creation. Consciousness is the invisible part of creation. And we can take a very simple example like the fan. So the fan is which part of creation? Matter, which is visible. Which is the invisible part of the creation? The electricity. We cannot see electricity, but that represents consciousness. So consciousness is not visible, but it exists, and fan is the matter which is visible. But we must understand one thing. The fan by itself cannot function without the electricity, right? And even if electricity is there and there's no fan, you also get no air. So that means if there is Atma and there's no body, there is no life. If there is body and there's no Atma, there is also no life. So you need a combination of both factors to create life in this universe. So both are very important. Okay? Now, so jnanam is the 20 qualities that we discuss about. Now, we have to understand that we all go through four stages. Why is this jnanam so important? Knowledge of Kshetra and Kshetrajna, why is it so important? In our spiritual journey, we generally go through four stages. What are the four stages? In the first stage, when we don't have this knowledge, now jnanam I'm talking about is not this jnanam, I'm just talking about spiritual knowledge. When we don't have spiritual knowledge about what is body, what is matter, what is consciousness, our initial understanding of ourselves is what? I am this body, right? You say, I am this body, right? Then you start listening to this knowledge. Okay. There's Atma, there's Atma, there's Atma. Then you come to the second realization, which is what? then you say, you accept that there is this consciousness, right? You don't accept that you are the consciousness, but you accept there is something called Atma, there is something called consciousness. So you say what? I am the body which has Atma. I accept that because of Atma, I have life in me. I don't accept myself as Atma, but I say I am the body which has this Atma in me. And slowly as you progress more and more in the knowledge, and you come to accept that actually Atma is my real nature, then we come to the third stage, which is what? Until that becomes a conviction in you that your real nature is Atma, then what should your thinking be? I am Atma which has this temporary body. The body is not me. Now my thinking changes to I am Atma which has this temporary body. And then there comes a fourth stage eventually. And what is the fourth stage? So at the third stage is Aham Atma Asmi, Aham Brahma Asmi. I understand I am the Atma which has this temporary body. Then what is the fourth stage? No, that's third stage. Aham Atma Asmi, Aham Brahma Asmi. Now what is the fourth stage?
I'm Brahman.
That's the third stage. Aham Atma Asmi, I'm Atma. Aham Brahma Asmi, I'm Brahman. But there's a fourth stage. You see, the oneness, that same Atma in me is the Atma which is in everybody. I am that all-pervading consciousness. So I don't see any difference in myself and the rest of the creation. I identify with everything in creation. And that is what we call the height of that spiritual path. So now, when Arjuna asked this question for clarification of the six, I think that person behind doesn't have the paper. So when Arjuna asked for this clarification, in verse number 1, what did Krishna tell him? First he started to answer about Kshetra and Kshetrajna. In the very first verse. So what did he tell him? He said, Arjuna, understand that this whole, this body, idam shariram means this which you call the body, avidiyate, is known as kshetram. It is matter. It is a field of experience. It is a field. And just like a field we discuss. In a field you plant seeds and either you get a good crop or a bad crop. So we need this body to experience our past karmas. We need to take a particular body to experience the punyam and papam. And how do we experience punyam and papam? How do we experience our past punyam and papam? Through sukha dukha. Sukha is to experience your punya, dukha is to experience your papa. So we need this body, that's why he says this body is the kshetram. But we must understand, since kshetram is matter, not only this body is kshetram, the entire creation is kshetram. The whole world is kshetram. Is your mind kshetram? Yes. Your intellect? Yes. The entire world is kshetram. Then what is the difference between that kshetram and this kshetram? What is the difference? You say that world is kshetram, that table is kshetram, the chair is kshetram, this body also is kshetram. But what is the difference? Sorry? Huh? Okay, you say that person also is kshetram, I am also kshetram. Now what's the difference? The difference is this we consider very close to us. That's why he says idam shariram, because we always associate this body as most close to us. Even though that is matter, this is matter, but this I consider the most closest. So I am always more attached to my body than anybody else also. Right? Now, That is what he spoke about Kshetra. Then he says in the second two lines of verse 1, that tat vidaha, he uses the word tat vidaha, which you see in the fourth line. Tat vidaha means those who have come to realize this truth. They have gone through the study of the scriptures under the guidance of a master and they have come to accept the truth. What truth is that? He says, Veti Etat. The one who knows this Veti means to know, the one who knows this truth. Prabhu, they call that consciousness as what? Kshetrajna. So that is what the wise people who have gone through all the studies of the scriptures, they declare that the consciousness is called Kshetrajna. Okay? And why is it Kshetrajna? Because it enlivens the entire creation. Okay? So now Krishna wants to expand more of the knowledge on Kshetra and Kshetrajna. And this verse number 2 is a very, very important verse. Because it is the very essence of the Upanishad. Now, we know that there is consciousness, we know there is matter. But now Krishna makes another very, very important point. He says, this consciousness, Kshetrajna, know, Viti means know, may you know what? That this consciousness is in all the Sarva Kshetreshu. This consciousness pervades in every part of matter. Now, that is the highest teachings of the Upanishads, which I told you, we come to the fourth level. What is the fourth level? That consciousness which is in me is the same consciousness which is in you. Therefore, there is no difference. There is no difference at all. There is only one consciousness. You don't have a different consciousness, I don't have. He says what? The Kshetrajna is in all the Kshetras. Sarva Kshetreshu. He is in every part of matter. So there is only one consciousness. Then you may say, why give so many names? Why confuse us? One Jiva, one Atma, one Brahman, one Purusha, one Prakriti. Why so many names? Why confuse us? Why not just say A and B, finish? Why not just say A and B and finish? Huh? What? It's what?
It's not interesting.
It's not interesting. So we should add in more names. Make it more interesting. See, if you have one name in the house, wife calls you by one name, whatever it is, darling or sweetheart or whatever, okay? You go to office, do they call you darling or sweetheart? I hope not. So, they call you by a different name. Then your friends may have another pet name for you, right? You have different names you are called, okay? Now, what is the relevance of the names? It's in relation to where you are, right? If you are in the house, you have one name. If in the office, you have another name. If you are with your friends, you have another name, and so forth and so forth. So the names are given from the standpoint of what we associate with. When we call as Jiva, what we call as Jiva is when that consciousness is enclosed in a body, we call it Jiva. That means it is limited consciousness. It is bound by a particular body. That same Jiva, when it is all pervading, we call it Brahman or we call it Atman. That is the only difference. So one, it is limited consciousness, one it is unlimited. It depends from which standpoint you are looking at. Okay? So this is what we must understand, why there are so many names, because of this, from which standpoint are we looking at. And that's why we have Paramatma and we have Jivatma. Jivatma again is limited consciousness, Paramatma is all-pervading consciousness. So we must be very clear, at the end there is only actually matter and there is consciousness. Okay? So he says, I am that one consciousness which is in all the bodies, Sarva Kshetreshu. question. And what else he says? Look at the third line. Kshetra, kshetra, neyo, jnanam. Jnanam, knowledge of matter, kshetra, knowledge of kshetrajna, consciousness. Krishna says, that I consider the most supreme knowledge. That is the highest knowledge. There is no knowledge which is more greater than that. So that means he wants us to know about matter, we should know. He wants us to know about consciousness. Beyond that knowledge, once you understand these two, there is nothing that is more greater than that. There is nothing else to be known. And in the Mundaka Upanishad, one of the very famous Upanishads, this knowledge of Kshetra and Kshetrajna is called Paravidya, the most highest knowledge, Paravidya. And all other types of knowledges, including knowledge of rituals, prayers, chanting of mantras, all other types of knowledge, including history, geography, whatever you learn, is called Aparavidya. Now, why is that this knowledge is called Paravidya? The knowledge that we are going through now in chapter 13, knowledge of Kshetra and Kshetrajna. Why is this called Paravidya? It is knowledge about the absolute reality, and this knowledge alone will lead to your self-realization. It will lead to moksha. Whereas all other knowledge you have of chanting mantras, doing rituals, doing prayers, doing our pilgrimage will only keep you revolving in this samsara. Only knowledge to understand your reality, who you are in reality, that is the knowledge that will give you ultimate freedom or self-liberation. Okay? So that's why it is called the most highest knowledge. Now, since this knowledge is considered by Krishna to be the most highest knowledge, which will lead to our liberation, that's why Krishna says it is important now that I tell you what is Kshetra, what is Kshetrajna, and then you will understand more clearly. So in verse 3 he says first let me tell you what is Kshetram, matter. And two things he wants to tell us about matter. One is yadra. The word yadra here means what is matter? What is the characteristics or definition of matter? And he gave us 24 qualities of matter. If you recall in verse number 5, we went through last week. So in verse number 5, he gave 24 different qualities of matter. And what were the qualities of matter? The 24 elements, if you recall. What are the 24 qualities? Okay, we start with a very subtle, which is what? Avyaktam. If you look at the word avyaktam in the second line of verse 5, which means that which is in unmanifest state. Just like before the entire creation happens, the tree comes out, it is available in the seed, right? So this seed form is called avyaktam. It has not taken manifestation yet. So that is one of the aspects of matter also. When the whole world goes into pralaya, mahapralaya or destruction, the entire creation goes back into this, what we call as avyaktam or unmanifest. Right? And then when the world needs to be manifested, it comes out from this avyaktam and the different shapes, size, colors, etc. all come. Okay? So one is avyaktam. The second we discussed was here, ekam. Ekam is what? Mind. And it is not one mind or two minds. What is it? It is a collection of all the substance that is used to make your mind. So don't take ekam as the brain or the mind. It is the raw material that becomes the everybody's mind. Okay, that is ekam. Then we have, what else? We have buddhir, intellect. Okay? Again, it is totality of everybody's intellect, the raw material that forms your intellect, that forms my intellect. Buddhir, ahamkar, ego. Okay, totality of ego. So So ego also is there in all of us. Then you have Dasindriya, the 10 organs, which are the 5 organs of karma indriya, 5 organs of action, hands, legs, etc., vocal cords, plus the 5 organs of knowledge, which is called the jnana indriyas, eyes, nose, ear, etc. Okay? And then plus what? Pancha Mahabhutas, the 5 great elements, ether, air, fire, water, earth. Okay? And plus Pancha Indriya Gochara, sense objects. Meaning what? Each organ has got one relationship to its function. For example, the whole world has got sights. So the 5 Pancha Indriya Gochara means objects of senses are sound which is picked up by the ears, taste which is picked up by the tongue, form which is picked up by the eyes, what else? Touch which is picked up by the skin, and smell which is picked up by the nose. So sound, touch, taste, smell, all etc. are known as the Pancha Indriya Gochara. So if you add up all these, you get 24 qualities. And what are these 24 qualities? They are nothing but matter. Okay? So this is the composition of matter which he gave us in verse number 5. Now, I said Krishna was saying that I'll tell you 2 things about matter. One is, what is the composition? Second, he says, I will tell you what are the word he used was yatvikari. In verse number 3, you see second line. Yatvikari means, this matter is subject to modifications. Okay? So, not only I must understand about the nature of matter, I must also know this matter is subject to modification. What are the modifications? He gave us 7 modifications in verse number 6, which we discussed last week. And what are the modifications which we all experience, we all go through? Our physical body, our mind, our intellect goes through all types of modifications. What are the modifications? The first 2, Ichha Dvesha. Ichha means what I desire. Dvesha means what I don't like, what I hate. And we all have. We have various things that we like and there are things that we don't like. Right? Ichha, Dvesha. Likes and dislikes. So what we do now, because of our likes and dislikes, we divide the world into 2 parts. There is something I like, there is something I don't like. This person I like, that person I don't like. This food I like, that food I don't like. Isn't it? Our whole life is nothing but dividing the world into Ichha and Dvesha. And because we divide the world into 2 halves, what is the result? There is Sukham and Dukham. The person I like comes into the room, Sukham. The person I don't like comes to the room, Dukham. The more Ichha, Dvesha, the more desire and hatred you cultivate, the more you divide the world into likes and dislikes, the more you are affected by Sukham and Dukham. And then Sukham and Dukham experiences. And then the Sukham and Dukham, also he mentions one word there, Dhriti. The Dhriti means is what we call, what is the English word for dhriti? Fortitude. Willpower or fortitude. When there are things I like, what do I use my willpower to do? I go and acquire, I chase after that. So my dhriti also is dictated by my Ichha, Dvesha. Because what I like and dislike, I use my effort, my willpower, dhriti, to chase after things I like, and things which I don't like, I run away from them, right? So that dhriti is also subject to modification. I use it to go after what I like, I run away from what I don't like. So that is dhriti. Then the next quality or modification he spoke about is samghatas. The word samghatas means, some words are not easy to translate, but it means basically aggregate. Now, what is this aggregate? Aggregate is all the parts of your body that come together to form this body. Okay? Now, that also is subject to modification, isn't it? Does not our hair go from black to white? Any doubts, you go and look at your pictures before. Does not our teeth also fall off one day? Does not our skin also get wrinkled? So Sangharthas is this collection of body parts which are also subject to modification. Okay? Now, the other quality he talks about is Chetana. Chetana means, actually here the translation given is consciousness, but this is wrong. Wrong in what sense? We are talking now about matter, right? Does matter have consciousness? Does matter have consciousness? No, right? Yet, one of the modifications given is consciousness. So we must understand, matter has borrowed consciousness. What do we mean by borrowed consciousness? Now, your body is made of matter, right? Hands, etc., legs, all this, they are made of ether, air, fire, water, earth. That is matter. We know matter has got no consciousness, yet my hand can move, my eyes can see, my nose can smell. Why is that? Because the consciousness is there, right? So, Adi Shankaracharya gives this example. When we put water in a pot, water is matter, right? Water has got no consciousness, right? When we put fire below the pot, what happens to the water? Hot. Is heat a natural part of water? No. So where did the water get the heat? From the fire. So the heat is a borrowed consciousness. Because of that, water starts boiling. How we know heat is not part of water? When you switch off the fire, the water cools down. It returns to its original. So Chetana here means borrowed consciousness. Borrowed consciousness means as long as the jiva is in us, because of the proximity of jiva to our body, the body assumes consciousness. It is borrowed consciousness. The minute the jiva leaves the body is there, matter is there, but there is no consciousness. Okay? So Chetana means borrowed consciousness. It is also a modification of matter, because matter has got no life. But it appears to have life. Why? Because of the presence of the consciousness. So all these qualities he talked about are the modifications of what? Chetra or Chetrajna? Chetrajna. Right? The qualities given is of matter. The modifications also are of matter. There is no modification on consciousness. Consciousness is never subject to modification. Okay? So what does he say about consciousness in verse number 3? He says, about consciousness, I am going to tell you what? Yat prabhavas. So about matter, he told us, I'll give you the quality of matter and I'll tell you what is the modification of matter, which he told us in verse number 5 and 6. Now what about consciousness? He says about consciousness, I'm going to tell you yat prabhavas. The word yat prabhavas means what? The powers or glories of consciousness. What is the amazing thing about consciousness? And that he will explain in verses 13 to 17. So when we come to 13 to 17, it will be an explanation about what is the glory or the powers, the powers of consciousness. Okay? Because consciousness is not subject to modification. Consciousness has got no attributes. It has got no sound, no shape, no taste, no smell, etc. It has only got powers. Okay? So that he told now. Now therefore, in verse number 4, Krishna said, before I tell you about Kshetra and Kshetrajna, let me also tell you that this knowledge is not something which I just hooked up right now on the battlefield. It is not a new knowledge. This knowledge this has got a very ancient background. It has come from thousands and thousands of years of wisdom. Where is it found? He says, Rishivir Bahuda Gitam. Gitam means it is sung. By who? Bahuda, many, many, many. Who? Rishis. The great sages and saints, they meditated on this. They received divine revelations from Brahman and they came to the conclusion about this Atman. What is this consciousness? And then they have been singing. Now the word singing also is very important to note, because our Vedas, our Upanishads, the Gita are all put into poetical form so that we can recite and remember easily. So the Rishis also sang, they spoke about all these qualities of the consciousness. Therefore, this knowledge has been passed down from generation to generation to generation, thousands of years back. And not only Rishivir Bahuda Gitam, but he says, Chandovir Vividei Pratak. Chanda is the meters of the Vedas. They are called Chandas. So Chanda Vividei Pratak means, very clearly, in the meters of the Vedas, this aspect of consciousness is very, very clearly explained. So thus, Rishis also speak about it. The Vedas also very distinctly, very clearly tell us what is matter, what is consciousness. They explain to us in very clear, definite terms. Then not only that, he says, Brahma Sutra Padai. So in the words of the Brahma Sutra, as I told you, Brahma Sutra is a text written by Ved Vyasa. It contains 550 verses. And it is a very deep understanding about what is Atman. It explains very clearly what is Atman. Okay? And Shankara has also written a long commentary on the Brahma Sutra also. So it is said, when we study the Brahma Sutra and the Bhagavad Gita plus the 10 principal Upanishads, they collectively, these three are called Prasthana Treya. If we want a total knowledge of the scriptures, we want total knowledge of spirituality, studying the Gita is not enough. We have to add the study of Brahma Sutra, we have to add the study of the 10 principal Upanishads. Collectively, this is what is called Vedanta or Prasthana Treya. So it is important that we also try to branch out and try to understand these other scriptures also. Okay? I know some of you are already wondering how to do all this, because Gita itself already, you know, it's not easy, but basically this is what, when you go to the Gurukul, this is what they teach you, is these three main things. Ten Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita and the Brahma Sutra. Okay? So Brahma Sutra Pades, and it contains Hetu Madhvir. Hetu Madhvir means it is full of reasoning and logical analysis. The scriptures, that's why there's a beauty about our religion. They don't just tell you believe. This is it. Don't question. They give you a logical reasoning. Why Atman? How to reach this Atman? So there is a proper logical reasoning and analysis in all our scriptures, and you are allowed to question also if you don't understand. Okay? So what Krishna is basically saying is that this knowledge is not new knowledge. It has been contained from the Vedas, from the Upanishads, and now in Bhagavad Gita he is just reviving the same knowledge. Okay? In fact, if you remember, that's what he said in chapter 4, verse 1. If you recall, what did he say? Without looking at your books. A very famous verse. He says, I give this knowledge to the sun god Vibhaswan. Right? I means who? The creator gave them this knowledge. What knowledge? About karma yoga and jnana yoga. I gave this knowledge to Vibhaswan. When did the sun god come? Right at the beginning of creation. Surya Devta. Because without sun, there can be no life also on earth. So, when the sun god was created, Krishna said, I gave him the knowledge also. And what did sun god do? Vivasvan handed it to his son, Manu. And we are all descendants from Manu, hence we are called Manushya. So Manu was the first human being to walk the earth, and he was gifted with this knowledge by Surya Devata. And Manu also did not keep the knowledge to himself. He imparted it to Ikshvaku. Ikshvaku is the first ruler of the solar dynasty, the sun dynasty. From his, that is called Surya Vamsha. From Surya Vamsha is where Lord Rama also came from also. So Ikshvaku also gave it to all his children also. He also taught the knowledge. But Krishna said somewhere along the line, as guru passed it to student and student became guru, guru then passed to student, somewhere along the line this knowledge was, it was less practiced. It was not destroyed, but it was less and less practiced. Why? Why
oral,
less practiced?
Oral tradition.
Huh? It was passed by oral tradition, but somewhere along the way also it was written down by Vyasa. But why was it less and less practiced?
Because we were not interested.
No time.
No time.
No time. How many students are here? Tell them why it was no time. Yeah. Well, it is before the first human creation came, because the first thing when the first human was born is Manu. When the next generation of human beings came, so Manu had to start passing it down to his children passed on to their children, and it went on and on and on. So when did the first human being walk the earth? Of course is Manu, but who came after Manu? That's the time when the knowledge was already there. But the problem is because our creative cycle is in a circle. So it has been going on and on and on. So we really do not know how many thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago this whole knowledge was. Very ancient knowledge. But we are very fortunate that Krishna came to re-establish back this knowledge in a very simple form of the Bhagavad Gita. 700 verses. And then you tell people Bhagavad Gita 700 verses, they say, "Are you why so many verses?" Then what you should do? You go and study the Vedas, 100,000 verses. Go and study Upanishads, 108 Upanishads. Simple 700 verses, you want to study, what more to do? So, here he says, it is a very... Yes, sorry.
Then Manu's descendant.
Huh.
Because the knowledge is passed to Manu and
his descendant.
They are very, very intelligent, very
correct.
Clever.
Well endowed with knowledge.
Not like the early caveman and all that.
Yes, you can say that also, yeah. But the unfortunate part was that's why the Satya Yuga people used to be very religious, very spiritual, and very close to the Devas. It is said that the Devas literally were walking around earth because it was so pure. But as the Satya Yuga went to, what was the next one? Treta Yuga. Treta went to Dwapara, Dwapara went to Kali Yuga, things became more and more worse. People became more and more adharmic. So that's why Krishna says, I have to come back now again and re-establish that same dharma, which previously was called Vedas, now it is called Bhagavad Gita. Same shampoo in a new bottle, like how they do packaging. Same knowledge but different title. That's all. So now he has given us that introduction that this knowledge is an ancient knowledge. He has spoken about Kshetra, Kshetrajna. Now he wants to take up the third topic, which is jnanam. What is jnanam? It takes up from verse number 7. Okay? So what is jnanam now we will start discussing. Okay, jnanam, as I mentioned, are the values or the qualities, right? Values or qualities which we need to cultivate, right? And in order to prepare the mind to receive this knowledge. Okay? And in verse number 7, he gives 9 virtues. Okay? Verse number 8, 9 and 10, 3 virtues each. So 3, 3, 3. And verse number 11, there are 2 virtues. So 9 plus 9 plus 2. That is total 20 virtues. Now, what Krishna would say at the end of giving these 20 virtues is that any individual who cultivates these virtues in some measure, then it will be easy for you to absorb and assimilate this knowledge. That means if we are not grasping this knowledge, we are not able to absorb and assimilate, it means what? We lack in these 20 virtues. So we have to cultivate these 20 virtues. Okay? In fact, it's very interesting that in the verse 6, he gave there, how many was it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, right? 7. 7 qualities which are the negative qualities subject to modification. Now he's giving us 20 qualities which will help us in gaining this knowledge. That means less and less of these 20 qualities we have is what? It will keep us in ignorance. If these 20 qualities we have in very little measure, it means we will always be in a state of ignorance. So if you want to be serious on a spiritual path, you should take note of these 20 virtues. Absence of these 20 virtues will take us away from spirituality into darkness. So that's why it is said the guru is very important seed to sow the knowledge in the students. But even if the guru is perfect, the knowledge also is delivered very efficiently, but the mind of the student is infertile, it does not have these 20 virtues, then what happens? Then that knowledge will never sink in. That knowledge will never become a conviction. So you'll come and hear and hear and hear, and after that everything will just be forgotten. Right? So it's very important that we understand these 20 virtues to prepare our mind properly. And even for those who are not interested in knowledge, even they have these 20 virtues, it will help in two aspects. The first aspect is, if you have these virtues, it will help in your FIR. You remember what is FIR? Frequency, intensity, and recovery. So every time you go through a troublesome episode, you will find that this knowledge will help and prepare you, and you will have less frequency of disturbed episodes. And if you have a disturbed episode, the intensity also will not be so great. And if you also suffer from these troubled episodes, your recovery will be faster. So these 20 qualities will help you in your FIR. Not only it will help you in your FIR, it will increase your triple C. Not vitamin C, a triple C. What is the triple C? Your calmness will increase. The state of your mind will get more calmer. Your cheerfulness will also increase. You will be able to face situations cheerfully, and your confidence in life also will increase. So whether you are interested in knowledge or not, these 20 qualities will come very beneficial to you if you can cultivate them. And they are given to us from verses 7 to 11. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 5 verses. Okay. And later on also, you will find these same 20 qualities will be repeated again in chapter 16 under the heading Daivi Sampat. Daivi Sampat means divine qualities. The more of these qualities you have, it will convert a human being into a divine being. So how do you become more divine? Cultivate these 20 qualities, you become divine. When you become divine, you are able to grasp this knowledge. Okay? And how do we generate or nourish these values? That's important for us to know. There are 5 methods given to us in the Shastras and the scriptures. How do we nourish, how do we generate these values? Okay, what do we put into practice to cultivate these 20 values? The first very important is viveka, introspection. Very, very important for every spiritual student that you have to go through this state of introspection on these 20 values. Why? Why should we introspect on these 20 values? Viveka is awakening of your intellect. So these 20 values, don't just read them and, you know, mechanically. We should introspect on these 20 values. For what purpose?
How much you are measuring up to that?
Yes, one is to self-assessment, to gauge, right? Number two is to grasp the importance or value of these 20 qualities. Because until we don't appreciate the value, why should we even cultivate them? Why should I even bother? But through my introspection, when I go through this seriously, when I think about this seriously, I understand the value of cultivating these 20 qualities. And I keep it in my mind daily. So Viveka is very, very important. So you can keep this as a checklist and go through this on a daily basis or whatever you have time to spare. Go through and see where you are progressing, where you are not progressing. Viveka. The second is Sankalpa. Another very important quality. Sankalpa here means you should make a determined effort, a determined promise to yourself that you will change your unhealthy habits. So all those qualities which are contrary to these 20 habits, you have to make a determined promise to yourself that you will learn and put effort to cultivate not all but at least some of the qualities. Okay, Sankalpa. So that is a what we call a determined attitude in you, a firm commitment in you. Okay? Three is what is called in our scriptures as Pratipaksha Bhavana. Prati, P-R-A-T-I, Paksha, P-A-K-S-H-A, Bhavana. Okay? This means we must put in effort to neutralize unhealthy thought patterns. How do you neutralize unhealthy thought patterns? There are so many negative thought patterns. No? From the time we wake up in the morning till the time we sleep, there are so many unnecessary, unhealthy thought patterns. How do we neutralize them? Exactly. So you divert. You must make that effort to push your mind towards some higher thoughts, good thoughts, thoughts of compassion, love, etc. That is your own effort. As you recall in chapter 6, what did Krishna say, verses 5 and 6? You are your best friend, you are your worst enemy. You meaning who?
Mind.
Your mind. It is your mind. So Pratipaksha Bhavana means you have to cultivate healthy thought pattern. Now supposing somebody you don't like, you really hate the person. And you know, unfortunately, the people we hate, we remember the most. Isn't it? Not the people we love, we remember. We always remember the people we hate the most. Constantly, the person comes in our mind, you know. So what do we do now? What? Imagine you're slapping the person. So send love out, send compassion out. The minute that negative thought comes, you fight that thought. You send love, you send prayers, you pray for the welfare of that person. It's very difficult in the beginning. Very difficult. You might pray with real anger and all like that. But as you do it, you keep on doing it, you see the thought pattern of your mind changing. So mentally you learn to forgive the person, forget the person and pray for the welfare of that person. You will find it does you a lot of good. You might say, why should I do it? It's not for that person, it's for your own benefit. So that is what we call Pratipaksha Bhavana, to change the pattern of our mind, going towards anger, hatred and all this, forcefully change the flow of your mind. You want something? Of course, of course. That's the best thing if you can do, if you can send love to the person and give the appropriate reaction to the action. So our thought is always keep sending out love to that person. Pray for that person. Send out your good wishes for that person. So Pratipaksha Bhavan. That's why we always have in our prayers what? Sarve Bhavantu Sukhina. We don't say Sarve Bhavantu Sukhina except is Sarve Bhavantu Sukhina, full stop. That's it, right? So that is the third. Fourth is important for us to cultivate Satsanga. Very important. Always keep associating with people who share the righteous virtues also. It's very important. Okay? And that's why we always engage with like-minded people. We always go and engage in the company of saints and sages. And in fact, Ramakrishna did mention in his Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, I don't know how far it is true, but it's said by a great person like Ramakrishna. He says, whoever you consistently associate with for minimum of 12 years, you will become like that person. So minimum of 12 years, if you constantly go on associating with that group of people, sattvic people, you will eventually also become sattvic. And if you go and associate with Rajasic and Tamasic people, eventually you also become like that. So satsanga is very, very important. The fourth point. Huh? Shankara also, about satsanga. Or associating with associating with the good people, okay? Being in the company of sages and saints, etc. Then the other qualities, prarthana. Prarthana means prayer, constant prayer. It's very important to connect with divinity. Okay, prayer, surrender to the Lord, constant prayer and surrender. Okay, prayer, surrender for what? Not to ask for more money, bigger house, bigger car, but endow me with these qualities, O Lord. May I be endowed with these qualities. So we pray for that. Okay, prarthana. So, okay, what are the qualities now, the 20 qualities? The first one here, he says, amanitvam. The opposite of amanitvam is manitvam. So the word a is the opposite, okay? Huh? The amanitvam, you take out the a, becomes manitvam. So what is manitvam? Manitvam means arrogance, pride, vanity, superiority complex. Okay? So amanitvam means what? Freedom from pride, freedom from arrogance, vanity, or to put it very simply, humility. Cultivate a very humble nature. Okay? Is a very important quality of a spiritual seeker. And that's why in our culture, why do we do namaskar to our elders? We do namaskar to gurus, to great saints and sages, to God, parents, etc. Because namaskar, what is namaskar actually? Why do you do namaskar? See the God in others? Samu? Humility. The idea is namaskar is an expression of our humility. The more and more you bow down to others, the more and more humble you become. It's an expression of humility. So, this namaskar is nothing but an expression of our humility. That's why in chapter 4, verse 34, Krishna says, when you go to Guru, what you should do first? Huh? Ask for prasadam. Pranipatena, remember? Paripatena, pariprashnena. Paripratena means to totally bow down to the Guru, to surrender. That is nothing but an expression of humility. Telling the Guru, now my mind is a blank piece, I am ready to receive the knowledge. It's an expression of our humility. Namaskaras. Okay? And our pride actually is due to what? Why is it that we are so proud?
Ego.
Ego is due to what? Why? Why is the I there? Why?
We feel we are the doer.
We feel we are the doer. What else?
We feel superior.
You feel superior. Why do you feel superior?
Huh?
Because of? Possession. So, when we talk about possession, we feel superior because of the great family we come from, the great house, car, all we have, is nothing but due to our own moha. What is moha? Moha is delusion. Now, what is this delusion? We take so much of pride in our accomplishments, our name, fame, power, position. These are a cause of our pride, isn't it? But what do the scriptures say? All this that we have belongs to who? It belongs to God. It is a gift from God. But we take that attitude that I worked hard for it. Because I worked hard, I got this car, I got this house, I got this name and fame. But all the scriptures say everything is nothing but a gift from God. If we look upon everything that we have as a gift from God and nothing belongs to me, then that moha is not there. When the moha is not there, the delusion is not there, there is no cause for pride. There is no cause for ego. Because everything comes from what? Para and apara prakriti, right? There is only two things in creation. Kshetra and Kshetrajna. Whatever you have is a mixture of two things. Who does Kshetra and Kshetrajna, Prakriti and Purusha belong to? God. So everything comes to us by the very grace of God. And don't forget a very important point. Everything is given to you by the grace of God and can be taken away also by God Himself. Without giving you 3 months notice. So He doesn't have to give you notice. Anytime you have to take it. Don't say, why God, why you didn't tell me, sorry. Okay, so therefore be humble and remove that notion of ownership and controllership. That is called Amanitva. Okay? Then the second quality is Adambitva. Adambitva is almost similar to Amanitva. Okay? But there's a little difference. When I've got pride and arrogance at mental level, okay, that is called Manitva. So Manitvam is having pride and arrogance. I think I'm very big. I think I'm very superior. I think I'm so great because all I have. It is not expressed outwardly. Okay? But when I express outwardly, that is called Dhambitvam. Now, how do I express this pride I have outwardly? By ostentation. Rolex watch, Jojo Armani clothing, I eat at 5-star hotels. That is expression of my pride at the physical level. So that is called Dhambitva. Okay?
Is it wrong to like buy expensive stuff and go 5-star hotels and all that? Is it wrong to do that?
No, it's not wrong. Of course, if you can afford it, it's not wrong. But the question we must understand is that as long as we don't, how we say, use it to show off, number one. Number two, if tomorrow we are not able to live the same lifestyle, it does not affect us. So we are not, our happiness, our security and our state of mind is not governed by what we have, by what we are, who we are. So as long as I am not dictated by the objects, I am the master, I don't have to worry. But the minute we get attached to this, we cannot live without it, that's when it becomes a problem. Right? So have it, but understand that it's all a gift from God. Be humble and enjoy. Nobody is saying, you work hard, you make money, you want to go on a holiday, go. You only need a 5-star hotel, go and eat. Enjoy. But always be humble and understand this is all through the grace of God. And tomorrow you're not able to enjoy it, just let it go. Right? So that's
expression of detachment.
Yeah, exactly. It is a mental detachment. Okay? So Dhambitva is ostentation, showing off by my words, how I speak. You know, you, I think already by now there's some person's mind, somebody coming to your mind, you can think who's like that and speaking very arrogantly and all that. By the type of clothes they wear, by the type of company they mix to show off to others. And this is a big obstacle on the spiritual growth. So, Adambitva means what? Simplicity. Cultivate a simple life in terms of your speech, in terms of your dress, in terms of your ornaments. May you lead a simple life. Simple living will lead to high thinking. Right? Second virtue is simplicity. Third quality, Ahimsa. Ahimsa, you can understand, is non-violence, which is a virtue that converts a human being into a saint. So the saint is not identified by just wearing yellow robes and having a long beard. The primary saintly virtue is Ahimsa. Developing, and what is Ahimsa? Ahimsa doesn't just mean I don't go and hit somebody, that is called Ahimsa. What is the real definition of Ahimsa? Yes, it is thought worth and deed, but what is the essence of Ahimsa? What is the cause of Ahimsa or non-violence? Having that love or a sensitive mind to the feelings of others. We cannot practice Ahimsa until we have this. Until I have compassion or I have empathy and try to understand the feelings of others. Because then only I can practice Ahimsa. We must develop a sensitive mind. So non-violence must be practiced, of course, as we said, at all three levels, mental, verbal and physical. And that Krishna will discuss in detail in chapter 7 under what we call austerities of speech, austerity of mind and austerity of body also. Okay. Next quality, Shanti. Shanti to practice, yes, sorry. Towards a living thing or what?
Is it towards living thing close or towards anything?
Yeah, when we talk about because then we are talking about animals, we are talking about, of course don't ask me whether we should kill mosquitoes. We better wet the mosquitoes. So yes, against animals, against plants, against nature, environment also. Ahimsa is everything. That's why we have the Pancha Mahayajnas, where we contribute to the environment. We feed the birds, we feed the cows, we plant trees, we take care of the environment also. So Ahimsa is everything, totality. Okay. That's why we see divinity in everything. Shantir. So Shantir is, to practice Ahimsa also, you must cultivate a mind that is Shanti. Shanti means a mind that does not get disturbed easily. And some disturbances, of course, caused by others. You know, as I said, some people you don't like, that is the people you remember. So Krishna gives us some hints in chapter 17, verse 16, how to cultivate this Shanti in the mind. If you look at chapter 17, verse 16. What are the thoughts? And this is where we must use our sankalpa. That's why they say morning get up, read spiritual things, read positive things, do your mantras, do your prayers, so you start the day with the right flow of mind, right? Rather than we get up and read about all the violence and all the CNN and BBCs and all that, and then you start the day with already negative attitude already. So that, what Krishna is saying here, always harbor cheerful, positive thoughts. Do not allow negative thoughts to come in your mind. There's only one way we can purify our mind is through this sadhana of cultivating continuously positive, beautiful thoughts about God and reading the spiritual things in the morning, chanting your mantras, so that flow goes already into your mind. So that sadhana must be practiced. And sometimes, of course, we find self-restraint very difficult. You find people saying things about you, so rather than respond back, it is better also to walk away. It's better to walk away, okay? So to cultivate this sattvic mind and pray for that person, whoever is abusing you, it is difficult in the beginning, but the more prayers you send out for the person, you feel your mind itself gets calm, right? So cultivate that, the non-violent remedy also. And understand one thing, the benefit, what is the benefit of a non-violent remedy? Violent remedy, benefit is it works instantly. Developer calls you cockroach, you slept in. Means what? Immediate settlement, right? But what is the benefit of a non-violent remedy? Your mind is at peace. What is the second benefit? Karmic effect. You don't create another karmic effect. The more violent thoughts you create in your mind, you create another karmic effect also. So, don't resort to violence. Practice Ahimsa. Next quality, Arjavam. Arjavam means sincerity. Be straightforward, be sincere in all your actions. Absence of crookedness, again, at all three levels. There are many people who are very sincere in their action, but in the mind thinking something else. So when we talk about Arjava means to align your thoughts, your words and your actions in the same line also. So not just thinking nice thoughts, but you also should behave in a decent manner. The words that you use also should be proper words also. So Arjava means aligning and having sincerity at all three levels. Okay? That's another important quality in our spiritual progress. Acharyo Pasanam is another quality. Acharyo Pasanam. Acharyo Pasanam means, there is two words here. Upasanam means here to serve or to revere or to honor such a person who, Acharya, who is your spiritual guide. Okay? So one must always revere and respect who is the spiritual guide. And understand that when you do that, you are not worshipping the Guru, we are worshipping the knowledge that the Guru is imparting. Many times we get carried away by the Guru, but we fail to understand it is not the Guru, because the Guru also has got a limited lifespan. One day he also has to go. What should you worship? You should worship the knowledge, not the personality. Because it is the knowledge that will help you. The Guru is not going to help you. The Guru is imparting knowledge. The knowledge is going to help you. So always worship the knowledge, not the person. That is very important. Right? And why we should not worship the Guru? The Guru also get ego also. And not only that. Because the knowledge does not belong to the Guru. Where did the Guru get the knowledge? From his Guru. Where did his Guru get the knowledge? From his Guru. So who is the Adi Guru? God himself. All this knowledge does not belong to any Guru. It has all come from the Adi Guru, that is God himself. So what the Gurus are doing is just basically repeating the same thing. That's all. So we do namaskaram to the Guru. We give dakshina. That is our duty to do. And most important to understand, what's the difference between a Guru and a teacher? Teacher will make you always dependent on him. The Guru will always make you independent. Take the knowledge and go. Don't be dependent on the Guru. Because Guru also is finite. That's why the definition of a Guru is given in chapter 4 verse 34. That Guru himself is identified. Who qualifies? Not everybody qualifies to be a Guru. They must have those qualities which are listed in chapter 4 verse 34. Right? So always remember this, the Guru will never make you dependent, he will always make you independent. Okay? No, my point is you can worship the living Guru, but not worship the personality, worship the knowledge that is imparting to you. So how do you appreciate it? You bow down and touch his feet, you give him Guru Dakshina, you put garland on him. But understand, it's not the personality, it is the knowledge in him that you are worshipping. So we must be very clear and separate the personality and the knowledge. Because personality is temporary, comes and goes. It's the knowledge that is going to remain with you. So we worship the Guru not because of his personality, we worship because of knowledge. And we are worshipping not the Guru, we are worshipping the knowledge. So your worship is basically a physical manifestation or expression of the appreciation of the knowledge, not the Guru. So that's what I mean. That's why it's very important we don't get carried away and pursue the Guru when it is a knowledge that what we should hang on to.
So brother, it's actually the mindset, isn't it?
What do you mean?
Physically we are actually worshipping the Guru.
Correct.
But to me now I realize that we actually worshipping.
Correct. Not the personality, but the knowledge we are worshipping. That's most important. So that even tomorrow the Guru goes away, you are not affected. Many people hear, Guru gone, what do I do now, my whole life is gone. No, because you didn't catch on to the knowledge. You are all the time fascinated by the personality. You should catch on to the knowledge. Because knowledge is going to help you, Guru is not going to help you. Yes?
If you are appreciating the knowledge, then why didn't we have to bow down to him and put the mala and touch?
See, he doesn't want it.
Yeah.
You are expressing your happiness to him.
Why do we have to appreciate?
Sorry, why?
Why do we have to appreciate?
You don't have to. Nobody is telling you to do it. If you want to do it, it's up to you. Then it is out of respect to him that thank you for sharing this knowledge. It's not that the Guru expects this thing. But you see, there are times when I conduct some classes, people come and give me money in envelopes. They say, Guru Dakshina. I say, I don't want all this, I don't want money. I didn't start these Gita classes to make money out of it. But people come because they feel that, you know, I have taken something, I want to give back something. So they come and give me envelopes of money. Now what do? I can't keep it, it's wrong for me to keep it. So I have to donate it off to the ashram. Why? Because where did I gain my knowledge? From my Guru. So I put the money back to my Guru's ashram. So people come and give because out of their own respect or appreciation, they feel I'm taking. How should I give back? So whatever you want to give, but that goes back to the what you call the ashram. So similarly, it is up to you whether you want to express, but never get lost in the personality. That's very important. Because understand one thing, the personality is temporary. The personality will go one day, but knowledge will always remain with you.
If we get stuck, personality is also duality, right?
Again, yes, correct. You're very right. It's duality again. And then you get affected. Yeah. Right? You get affected. So, knowledge is what we appreciate. Next quality, saucham. Saucham is basically cleanliness, okay? Purity again at all three levels we must maintain. Mental purity, kaya is body, vak is speech, and manaha is mind. So purity in the body, purity in speech, and purity in the mind. Now, manaha means again keeping our thoughts dharmic, always thinking about positive, about religion, about spirituality, about God. And especially your mind should always focus about these 20 qualities. Continuously you must think about these 20 qualities. How am I going to cultivate these 20 qualities? What should I do to cultivate these 20 qualities? So mind is always kept focused on these 20 qualities. Kaya, keep the physical body clean, wear clean clothes, keep your environment clean, the place where you live, the place where you work, the place where you pray, keep your environment and your clothes also clean. Vak, at the speech level, purity at verbal level, Krishna explained elaborately in chapter 17, verse 15, when he will tell us what is the criteria for sattvic speech. That is, speak with love, speak with compassion, speak words that are not hurtful, and speak words which are truthful. And even if words are truthful, you should first find out how can I tell it in a diplomatic way. And even if it's true and you can put it in a diplomatic way that doesn't hurt the person, but yet the third thing it tells us is what? Supposing it is the truth. Supposing I can put it in a diplomatic way. What is the third? Does it benefit that person? Is it beneficial to that person? So there are certain criteria, there are certain checkpoints which we should use in our speech. So here saucha means purity at all three levels, body, speech and mind. Stairyam. Stairyam means persistence, steadfastness in what? On the spiritual path, especially when we face various obstacles in life. Because it is very easy to go on a spiritual path when everything is going very nicely. It is when we face obstacles, that's when our resistance breaks down. So this is very easy to give up our spiritual sadhana, blame God, blame the environment, everything. But this stairyam, the steadfastness, is to understand that everything that is happening is due to what? Prarabdha karma. Prarabdha karma. And you have to exhaust your prarabdha karmas through punyam and papam experiences. You have no choice. The reason you've taken this body is to exhaust your prarabdha karmas through punyam, your punyam and papam, through sukham dukham experiences. So whatever we go through, we have to have this thairyam, this persistence on the spiritual path. That's why Krishna was urging Arjuna not to run away from the battlefield. This is something you have to face because of your prarabdha. Do your duty. Don't run away from it. That duty has been given to you due to your own prarabdha karmas. Okay? Atma vinigraha. Atma vinigraha is the last quality. I'll stop and we will stop here. Atma vinigraha here. Atma does not mean soul. Here atma means body, the senses, the body and the senses. So atma vinigraha means having self-control or discipline over your organs of senses. Right? Now why is it important? Why should we have discipline? What's the reason? Continuously scriptures tell us, lead a disciplined life. Control your senses. control your body. Why? Is what?
Extrovert.
No, not yes, it is an extrovert life. Yes, yes. Of course, it pollutes your mind if you don't, if you are not desires, you know. But what is the other main reason that we should lead a disciplined life? Keeps us in control. Okay, what is the benefit of you being in control?
You are not expected.
Sorry?
I
can't hear.
You're moving towards goodness.
You move towards, okay.
You are the driver of your energy.
When we lead a disciplined life, we conserve our energies and direct it to the direction we want to go, isn't it? Because it is when we lead an indisciplined life, that's when we find that we cannot spend time on spirituality. So you say you want to spend time on spirituality, you want to spend time on prayers, meditation, attending spiritual talks. But if you lead an indisciplined life, where is that conservation of the energy? So the main purpose to lead a disciplined life, to be focused with our senses, with our mind, with our physical body, is to conserve this energy and direct it to the direction we want to go. So that is why Atma Vinigraha is very, very important. By doing our duty, conserving our energy, we find that we have more time, more energy for the spiritual path. Okay? So we will stop here, and when we come back next week, we will take up the rest of the qualities from verse 8 onwards. Vasudevasutam devam kansa chanuramardhanam devaki anandam krishnam vande jagadguru. Thank you.
Anything else?
Actually, I'm a bit confused because